Hey, folks, it's intermission time.
Yes, there's an air about hot coffee that's hard to resist. Full-bodied, refreshing hot coffee makes any time a pleasant interlude. Won't you have some now?
Coffee has come a long way since the days of the drive-in movie. Barista and mixologist Ryan Castellas is playing a big part in that continued evolution. Originally from New Berlin, Wisconsin, Ryan is known as the Dean of the Demitasse. Well, he is now that I've referred to him as that. Ryan is the founder of two Discourse coffee workshops. He started out in Sister Bay. Now he has moved to the sugar and cream city of Milwaukee. Ryan is sharing his love for Java with his book, The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. Ryan believes that you can tell stories with coffee. For example, he created a drink called The Dawn, named after Marlon Brando in The Godfather. So I traveled to Discourse in Milwaukee to find out more. The result was a suitably caffeinated conversation with Ryan. He told us how a childhood habit of creating concoctions led to a lifelong obsession with redefining coffee.
It's a very long and roundabout journey. I, for many, many years, most of my life, thought I was going to be a professional singer. I was pursuing opera and pursued opera all the way through my sophomore year of college when I was studying opera in Italy. And when I was in Italy training, I fell really, really in love with espresso culture, like this ritual of going to the bar every morning, putting my euro coin down on the bar, getting my shot of espresso, taking it down. It became something I fell deeply in love with. And when I moved back to the States, I needed to recreate that culture in my life. So my mom took me to the store. We got a little steam espresso machine, one of those $80 DeLonghi's, and I took it back to my college dorm and I'd make espresso for me and my roommates. And it became something that I loved. I loved being able to make this thing, care about this thing, share this thing with people. And so that kind of transitioned into me loving coffee and falling down that rabbit hole. It wasn't until several years later that I kind of came to this confluence of the storytelling that I loved in music and the craft of making coffee and how those two things kind of came together.
Mm. You say that the coffee industry, which has success through volume and routine, has often placed creativity in the back seat.
Yes.
Why do you think that this is the case?
So if you look at the coffee shops around the country who are doing the most innovative things, the most consistently, I think the original thought is, okay, those places are going to be in New York City, in LA, in San Francisco. But when you really break it down, what you start to see is that coffee has a very low overall profit. The margin is great, but the amount of dollars in per transaction is low. So when you're trying to meet a high overhead, what you need is to sell an enormous amount of vanilla lattes and drip coffee. That is the economic need for your business. And so because of that, a lot of the focus is placed on volume. How do we make things more efficient? How do we bring more heads in the door? And because that focus is placed on volume, some of that thought about the creative solutions that we could implement, things that maybe don't scale as easily to 100 out the door a day, but feel more comfortable at 30, those things kind of get left in the wayside. But then you look at these smaller towns, these lower rent areas, and you see these baristas who are free to think and dream creatively because that overall burden, that volume requirement is much, much lower. And so it becomes okay for a barista to formulate an idea that could only meet a quantity of 30 units a day because that's probably what they'll see. You know, so coffee is this model where if you are looking at maximizing the product, the profit of the model, it is almost always maximizing the productivity of the model. And in working with creative solutions, we often aren't thinking about productivity first, so we're thinking about expression. And so I think this smaller niche model that is less focused on the profitability and more focused on barista expression is something that is new and exciting, but something that's a little bit more foreign to the traditional model of running a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. I think you're right about that. When you opened your first coffee shop, Discourse in Sister Bay, Wisconsin,
yeah,
what was your objective?
My objective at the time, I was 23, and I really wanted to explore drink making through coffee in a way that I didn't feel was being done. You know, what I loved about coffee was this element of community, this element of craft, this element of precision, this never-ending journey to find the perfect shot. And so my journey into coffee was really technically minded at the beginning. When we opened Discourse, it was about, okay, how do we build on this? Like, what's next? You know, right now we're really, really good at making coffee. So where can we take it? And so for me, when we opened Discourse in Sister Bay, it was, how do we use coffee as a storytelling element? How do we tell unique and engaging stories through coffee? And can it be done? And is it interesting to people for it to be done? You know, so it was kind of a discovery process.
Mm-hmm. You and your team have come up with this new interpretation of the coffee experience, which you call the fourth wave. What is the fourth wave?
That's a great question. So when we look back at American coffee history, traditionally we divide it into three waves. So that first wave is going to be your Maxwell House, your Folgers, things that are really dependent upon that convenience aspect above all else. The second wave is going to be shops like Starbucks, Caribou. They kind of split the balance between convenience and quality. It's definitely a step up. You have these creative solutions, but it's still very much a productivity-driven model. The third wave, which is where we've been for about the last 20, 25 years, a term coined by Trish Rothgeb of Wrecking Ball Coffee Roasters in San Francisco, the third wave is really about transparency. So it's about honoring the producers. It's about acknowledging the entire pathway that coffee takes from farmer to barista preparing that coffee. And in many, many ways, it involves the barista getting out of the way. It involves the barista dialing in that coffee to perfection, but not to their own expression, to the expression of the farmer, to the expression of the roaster, to be an expert translator in the intention of the coffee. With the fourth wave, we give the barista a voice. We say the point of this is barista expression. We've gotten really, really, really good at making good coffee as an industry. And so in the fourth wave, instead of making great transparent coffee the goal, great transparent coffee is the baseline. It's what we work from. And if you think about this like a cocktail bar, right? Like a bartender, what they do, they take amazing spirits from all around the world and then they translate them into their own voice through their cocktails. And so what the fourth wave is it's saying, hey, baristas should have some of that fun too. It's bringing that mentality into the coffee space of saying, hey, we're going to take these amazing transparent coffees from around the world. We're going to serve them to you in a beautiful format, but we're also going to play with them and we're going to express ourselves through them. And that focus on the customer experience, that focus on novel engagements with the customer, with the guest, that is the fourth wave.
Mm-hmm. I'm very intrigued by this idea that you have of wanting to tell stories through the drinks that you create. Can you give me an example of, or two of how you tell stories through coffee?
100%. There are so many fun examples that we could dive into. For me, stories have always been a really beautiful way to limit the framework of a drink. There are so many ingredients in this world. You know, to just kind of sit at a canvas and throw blankly is very, very difficult. And so what I love about story is it creates confines and it creates direction. So a great example, I think, is we did a menu a few years ago called Great Films, and basically this film, or this classic films menu, were all these kind of classic either American or English films that we wanted to kind of recreate through drink. One of the movies that we chose was The Godfather. And so for our drink for Marlon Brando, you know, we kind of sat back and we asked ourselves, hey, if Marlon Brando walked into the cafe, what would he order? And what we came up with was very much inspired by that. So Marlon Brando, his character, the Don, of course, owned Sicilian olive oil plantations. That was kind of where he got a lot of his money. And so we knew we needed to use olive oil. We also knew we needed to use tobacco. You know, there had to be some sort of smoky element. Exactly. You know, he's sitting there with that stogie when he's sipping on it. So we had to come up with something that involved smoke. And so we had these two elements that we knew we needed to use. And of course, the Italian tradition is espresso. And so what we ended up coming up with was a drink called the Don. It was espresso that we shook with olive oil and egg white. The olive oil bound into the espresso through the protein net of the egg white. And so what you got was this luscious, beautifully silky, just delicious kind of rich espresso shot. To that, we smoked out the shaker with tobacco smoke. It was a tobacco and orange smoke. So you had these little notes of this kind of like cigar tobacco that would pop through that orange and would pop through that oiliness, that kind of rich mouthfeel with that green character from the olive oil. It was tremendous, and it told the story of the Don. And to finish that one off, just to kind of really hammer home the storytelling elements, we served it in a rocks glass that was uneven, so it would rock as you touched it, very much to symbolize the instability of the empire that the Don had built. And finally, the ice was a frozen bullet that we stuck right straight up in the glass. So in all of these ways, through presentation, through flavor, through texture, we're telling the story of the Don and what he would order if he came into discourse.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And thank you for describing that so beautifully. Your book features 40 recipes organized by 4 different moods. What are they?
Yes. So the moods in the book that we've chosen are comforting, rejuvenating, adventurous, and celebratory. You know, our whole idea of choosing these kind of mood states for the book, these emotions, was that I believe that we are actually, by and large, emotional drinkers. I think anytime we drink anything outside of water, there is some underlying emotional stimulus that is driving us to that drink. When we hear that somebody we love dies, we don't reach for a bottle of champagne. We reach for a bottle of whiskey, right? And when we want to celebrate a promotion at work, that's when we reach for that bubbly cocktail. We associate what we drink with how we feel. And so in the book, we wanted to make it very, very easy for the reader to take a look at the book and say, hey, what do I feel like right now? Do I feel adventurous? Do I want something that's going to comfort me? And then immediately guide the reader right to that section. We wanted to make this as easy to use, actually use, as possible.
Mm. What drink are you most proud of creating? Can you point to one?
It's a really, 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 really tough question. I think probably the most fun, like the one that I would love for people to try just because I think it'll blow their minds, is Matrix Reference. And Matrix Reference is towards the end of the book, second to last recipe in Adventurous. And it focuses around an ingredient called Miracleberry, which is grown primarily in Florida now. Contains a glycoprotein called miraculin. And what miraculin does is it rewires your sense of sour to taste sweet, which is this mind-numbing, trippy experience. We had it in the form of red pills, which is why we called it Matrix Reference, taking this red pill and kind of having your mind shifted and altered. And we served the same drink. It was a tart, tannic, aronia-based coffee cocktail on 2 ends of this Miracleberry tablet. On the left end, it's sour, it's tart, it's bright, it's delicious, but it's like lemonade. You take this Miracleberry tablet, and then you go to the right side, that second drink that came from the same shaker, and it is now sweet and balanced and full and lush. And that transition is mind-numbing. It is completely shocking. And it's something that I think is so fun and is a huge part of why we started Discourse. You know, it's we want to be able to find that limit, right? Like, I want to find where that uncomfortability stems over into the negative end of it, because I believe that discomfort is actually a good thing until it hits that threshold, right? Discomfort is growth. Discomfort is newness. Discomfort is learning. Discomfort is fun. And when we go out, that's what I want. I want somebody who can show me something that's going to make me think, ponder, question. And that's what we try to do at Discourse. And I think that's what Matrix Reference did in a huge way, was really pushed people into this world of this is different. This is new.
Yeah, exactly. Very well said. How do you think the kind of coffee drink experiences that you create will evolve?
That is a phenomenal question. My penultimate goal has really always been to be able to sit with guests in a longer format service where we have the ability to really connect on a deeper level over the drinks that we are serving. In Door County for a while, we did these omakase services, and they were these thematic celebrations. The first one we did was on vice. So it was 5 of the deadly sins that we represented through drink. The second one was growing up. So we went from infancy all the way through retirement in drink. And 20 guests would sit, and everybody would see drink at the same time, and we'd talk about it together, and we'd go around, and we'd answer questions. And that style of service is really where I would eventually love to move, at least a part of what we do at Discourse. I love coffee as a business, but the coffee shop model is extremely transactional. And there's that element of community that 30 seconds that we have with you at the register to try to bring you into our world and tell you what we do and why it's exciting. But to have a longer format of time with people, to be able to do a tasting menu with somebody where we can really talk to them about all of the thought that goes into these drinks, all of the preparation that goes into these drinks, that I think is the next step for us. It's being able to bring people even more deeply into the story of who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm. That whole storytelling element comes up again in that. Perfect. Exactly. Yeah. Ryan Castellas, thank you very much for allowing us to visit you here at Discourse Coffee in Milwaukee, and congratulations again on your book.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
I love coffee. I love tea. I love the Jaffa Jive, and it loves me.
Ryan Castellas is a barista, mixologist, and the author of The New Art of Coffee, From Morning Cup to Caffeine Cocktail. Find out more about Ryan and his latest caffeinated concoctions at WPR.org/beta.
When I went back and watched it for the first time since I was a girl when it came out, it was absolutely excruciating.
That's author Claire Dieterer talking about revisiting Woody Allen's Manhattan. It's a perfect example of the dilemma we face as fans. Can we love the art, even if we hate the artist? That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup. Oh.